Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope you're safe and happy and healthy physically and mentally at this time. There's a lot going on. There is a lot going on this week. And I want to start today, if I might, by referencing an email that I got earlier this week from a podcast listener, an Arsblog reader, a Patreon member called Andy. I hope he doesn't mind me going into this a little bit. I'm not going to go through all the details of what he had to say, but he described himself as a black Arsenal fan. And early in the podcast, James and I, well, actually, that'd be wrong to say. I said something along the lines of, let's leave all the terrible stuff that's going on to one side and let's just, you know, do the podcast and give people a bit of an escape, which, you know, I think is fair enough in some respects. But Andy expressed some disappointment in a very nice way, a very constructive way, I should say. He wasn't being critical, that we didn't address some of the things that are going on the podcast because of the platform that we have. And I responded to him and, you know, I said, A, that I was slightly overwhelmed by everything because of it was all just beginning to kick off in the US and the protests and everything else, you know, in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. But B, I didn't want to say the wrong thing. And Andy's email has sort of made me realize that maybe the wrong thing is saying nothing. That when you do have a platform, it is important to use it for good if you can do that. So let me just very quickly say Black Lives Matter. That Arsblog as an institution, if you like, but as representative of me, we'll always stand against racism and discrimination of any kind, and we will stand in solidarity with victims of it. I don't want to proselytize or preach here. Arsenal released a message during the week which said we stand against racism, we stand side by side with our black community, we stand with our black players of the past, present, and future, we celebrate diversity, we belong together. I shared that message. There was a small amount of pushback on that, and some people decided that was it. You know, they weren't going to follow me anymore, and that's fine. That's fine. And I know some people won't like this, and that's also fine. You don't have to listen. Nobody is forcing you. It's entirely your choice what you want to read and what you want to listen to. But I don't and will never understand objections to a message of anti-racism, of togetherness, of harmony and unity, and trying to make the world a better place. As much as anyone can make the world a better place by posting a picture of a black tile on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff, I'm aware that it's small fry, you know, when it comes to the major problems that people have. So what I want to do is I will share some things within the show notes here. I've got a couple of articles that I read this week, which I found very impactful. And you can find those links to those in the show notes. And I want to point you in the direction of the first 20 minutes of the Stadio podcast from earlier this week, in which Musa Okwanga, who has been a guest on this show, spoke very movingly and very eloquently about his experiences as a black man, as a football writer, as somebody whose view on this is something people seek, but often at the expense of his other area of expertise, which is football and football writing and tactics and love of the game, which is clear whenever you listen to him talk about it on the podcast. So have a listen to that. It really is worth 20 minutes of your time. And as a podcast anyway, it is something that should be on your general rotation. The other thing I just want to say very quickly, again, while respecting that it is a difficult job to do, the police brutality that we have seen this week should shock and worry and sicken everybody. Everybody. Peaceful protesters being tear gassed. And there are people standing in solidarity with black people in America as well. And they're out there and they're protesting and they're right to protest and they have a right to protest. And the speed and ferocity of the police response is something that should worry all of us. All of us. Because you can sit there from a distance and think, this has nothing to do with me. This isn't something that will affect me. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I'm a stand-up member of the community. But look at how quickly they put the boot in and the rifles in and the sticks in and the batons in and everything else to the vast majority of the people who are exercising their right to protest peacefully. The draconian measures that they were able to put in place so quickly. If you think this is something that will only have consequences for the people protesting or for black people or whatever else, however else you want to rationalize it, you should be worried because they can move the goalposts and you could be next. You could be the target. It is really sickening to see people whose job it is to uphold the law take the law into their own hands. And it is horrendous to watch people who are supposed to protect citizens terrorize citizens. Again, I know people are going to have different views on this, but all I can say is at this time, we need to stand up for one another. We need to look after one another. We need to protect each other, and that includes our rights as citizens, as people, regardless of our skin color. And we need to do what we can to address the issues of systemic and inherent racism in all our societies, because it is not simply an American problem. It is not simply a British problem. We have it here in Ireland too. You think of that young man from down in Kerry a few weeks ago who felt emboldened to send a string of racist messages to Ian Wright. So we can't pretend that where we live, everything is okay. We have to do what we can in our own communities too. So hopefully we can stop and we can think and we can change things and make things better for those communities that really need that to happen. So there you go. If you've got this far, thank you for sticking with me. Thank you, as always, for being here, for listening, for allowing me into your ears every week. Maybe some of you won't have me anymore, but that's okay. You know, the world keeps turning and life goes on and we'll be here doing what we do anyway. So let's get on with the show. It's a strange week this week because not a great deal has happened, at least from a footballing point of view. There aren't too many stories for us to dig our teeth into, but we are getting closer to the return of football. One thing did occur to me, though, and that is, what is the physical impact of the lockdown going to be on players? I think we all understand to an extent that there are going to be fitness issues because these guys have just been at home in their home gyms, and it's not the same as training every week. It's not the same as playing 2-3 games of football a week. How much will they have lost? And what's it going to take to get them back? And what are the challenges that Arsenal and other football clubs will face when the games kick off again? I thought it would be good to get some expert opinion on that. So who better to talk to us about it than Arsenal's former director of high performance and currently the high performance manager at Melbourne FC. It's Darren Burgess. Hi, Darren.
Hey, Andrew. How are you, mate?
I'm okay. So have you ever in your career come across anything quite as unprecedented as this in terms of what it's going to do to clubs, teams, players, fitness? Because, you know, we hear all the time about how players are like finely tuned machines, these professional athletes. It's extremely rare for there to be just a sudden stop in everything that they do.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's really come across it like this, Andrew, any sort of scenario like this. Although probably the best guide is the NFL lockout from 2011. And one of the consequences of that was a massive upturn in tendon injuries, particularly Achilles tendon, which sort of indicated that maybe in the period of lockdown, the players weren't necessarily doing enough intense load. So that was a pretty good guide for us in the industry. But other than that, it's been really hard to gauge just how much this will affect the players.
Mm. How would you look at what the players will have been doing individually? Because we know they've been away from the training grounds for a long time, and many of them have home gym facilities or gym equipment. We heard that Arsenal sent out these bikes to players to sort of help them with their cardio work. But what can players have been doing before they came back to training to try and maintain their level of fitness?
There's probably two issues. There's the fitness issue, which the problem with home gyms, a bike's not running, even a treadmill is not running because the belt is moving, whereas you have to kind of push off the earth when you're running. So a lot of players head off in their holidays to Marbella and things like that and jump on a treadmill and think that that's going pretty well. But nothing can beat sprinting and changing direction and turning. So those players who are fortunate enough to have a big backyard and can muck around with kids, they can probably do a lot more. I've seen some video clips online of some of the players at Arsenal and other clubs doing a lot of turning and sprinting, which is good. But doing bike, you can do bike work forever and a day. It's going to help a little bit.
Yeah,
but it's not going to help, when the coach is telling you to sprint after a ball and you're trying to chase Aubameyang down the wing or something like that. It's just a completely different fitness. So there's the fitness issue, and then there's also the loading up of tendons and joints, which is equally as important to prevent injury, and that can only be done by again, change of direction, jumping, turning, twisting, those sorts of movements.
Yeah, so is that the thing that will have affected the players the most, that sort of loading for tendons and what have you? Because, as a casual sports person, I know when you don't play football for a couple of weeks, and I realize I'm not the example to use here as somebody of my age, but you lose fitness pretty quickly. They're obviously working from a higher bar and a higher level, but I mean, will they in this period have lost a significant amount of fitness or how would you, is it possible to measure it in percentile terms?
Yeah, it's a good question. And to be honest, your experience having not played for 2 or 3 weeks because it's too cold or you've had a big night at the pub or something like that, that is exactly what they'll go through in their first hard training session, is they'll be sore just like you or I would. Can you measure it? Well, the club that I'm working with at the moment, we measured it, and the players were pretty good from a fitness point of view in the running test that we gave them. But as soon as we went into full contact, full twisting and turning, they all reported massive soreness, and we had to alter the training, the subsequent training sessions in order for them to sort of recover from the soreness. So, as long as the build up into the season is okay and prepares them for the fact that Arsenal are going to have to play, like a lot of teams, a high density of games in a small period of time, they'll be okay, because hopefully they've been doing enough to keep them going in the break, and the change of direction that they get introduced to over the next 3 or 4 weeks will help them.
Do you feel the return to training, and particularly the return to full training, and the gap to games starting again, is sufficient for clubs to build players back to a level of fitness that's required for the Premier League? Because it feels quite short, and I can understand why, because there are obviously pressures to get football going again. There are financial implications for the games, for the clubs, etc., and for the broadcasters, of course. We heard that they wanted players back in a couple of weeks, and the club's managers were looking for 4 weeks, so they settled on this 3-week compromise. Is that sufficient?
I think the short answer, as you said, is it has to be because of all those reasons that you've just made out. So I don't want to put the fitness of players ahead of the millions and millions, that people want to watch and that people are going to lose. But Ideally, 4 weeks, it'd be enough. But I think you can manage in three, no problem. As long as the managers are prepared to rotate squads a little bit, then I think 3 weeks is plenty. One of the problems is the restrictions placed on the actual training. You know, the Premier League put out a fairly instructive document on what you are and aren't allowed to do, and even fairly prescriptive in terms of five-a-side in this bigger field and this smaller field. And whilst teams don't have to strictly adhere to that, it was a pretty sort of direct document that this is what we recommend. So that takes a little bit of the freedom away in terms of how hard you can push players early, which some players will be able to cope and others won't. And it's up to the managers and fitness and doctors to understand which players can and can't.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's obviously a collective training that will go on and the players that are doing their own things. But how important is it going to be to identify players who are struggling a bit, perhaps players who have been coming back from injury? And I think of Hector Bellerin, for example, Rob Holding at Arsenal, who've had cruciate ligament injuries, and because of that, they had subsequent aches and strains and niggles, which kept them sidelined. I mean, during this period, is that something they could have worked on to get rid of those particular issues that they've been having? Because I think with Rob, it was a knee, and Hector had some muscle strains. So are those things that you know, during this period of time, it might have been beneficial for them to sort of bring them back to a base level, or are they going to struggle similarly when training restarts again?
I think Hector and Rob would be really happy with the break, because right, exactly what you said, it'll bring other players down a bit because they'll have lost match fitness,
yeah,
and it'll allow them, and they're both unbelievably diligent workers, so they'll have worked on those weaknesses that you outlined, and they'll come back to as good a level as everybody else, just because of the break. So certainly for those players who have weaknesses and deficiencies, this is a perfect opportunity to work on those, and particularly with the resources available to, in terms of number of staff that they can consult with, the home gyms and things like that.
Yeah,
there's not much of an excuse to not correct those sort of issues. So Hector and Rob would be pretty happy with the break, I think.
What would be the things, the sort of red flags that you would be looking for as somebody involved in managing and maintaining the fitness of players? How important is it for the players to be completely honest with you about the way they feel after a session or after a week's work? I know that in particular young players are sometimes, they have a tendency maybe to downplay aches and strains because they so desperately want to play and they want to be involved, and that can be and has been detrimental in the past.
Yeah, look, within my field, one of the things that is really popular and used worldwide is this rate of perceived exertion, where, Andrew, you do a session and then I say, how hard did you rate that? And you think, okay, what do I think he wants to hear here? Does he want to hear that it's easy? And so that's what players think. So my personal view is I don't take a whole lot of notice of that. I ask them because sometimes you'll find out something. But generally speaking, I look at the objective markers. So from that, and at Arsenal, we looked at the heart rate versus the work rate. So what did you produce in terms of your GPS, your distances, your change of directions? And then what did that cost you from a heart rate point of view? Because a heart rate doesn't lie. The technology that we use there took into account respiration rate as well. So you can, you know, you could really tell what the cost of that period of work was. So initially, we would do, if I was there and in my current club, we do a standardized test, which is a really easy 4-minute test where you can just check how players are responding to the workload. It's a pretty easy, non-invasive thing to do. And from that, you can determine who is adapting well and who isn't. You still ask them because I can come up with conversation, had a bad sleep, good sleep, had a fight with my girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever it might be. So it's still useful to ask them, but I like the objective side of things.
Sure. And if we think about what the players are going to face going from training to playing games, so we hear all the time about one of the things is a player can be fit, but, you know, coming back from injury, it takes some time to get match fit, if you like. So is that another step up And is that another risk for players and managers to deal with? That a guy who looks fit on the training ground, when you put him into the match situation, when it is more intense, when you're having to compete more and fight more and do more physically within a game than you would do in a session, which isn't to say that they don't work hard in that, but it is a different dynamic. What is the sort of risk there?
Yeah, it's enormous, and that's where your profiling of your players and the experience of the players is massive, because you, no matter who tells you, you can't replicate a Premier League game. Arsenal are going to play Manchester City, I think it is, first game, and it doesn't get too much harder than that. So, to go into that environment, albeit that Manchester City are the same, in the same boat, but one thing that you can't buy is experience, and City have got far more experienced players than what Arsenal do. So that is going to hold them in far better stead, because they can be a bit more efficient in their movements and efficient in their work than perhaps what an inexperienced player can be. So the answer to your question is, it's risky. You need to know your players in terms of your starting 11 or 10. You need to make sure that those guys are probably the more resilient, and you may have to compromise one or two that you might want to start for players that have either tested well, responded to training well, or are a little bit naturally more resilient in those first one or two games, just to make sure that you don't lose them for the next 9 or 10.
Can we talk a little bit about the kind of injuries that players are going to pick up? And I think it's inevitable that they will. We saw in Germany, I think there was a report that there was a 250% increase in terms of injuries reported. I don't know what amount of those have been serious injuries, or what might be categorized as serious injuries, as opposed to sort of routine muscle strains and what have you. But what are the main injuries that you think players are going to have to deal with when they do get back playing and sort of build up the muscles over a period of time?
Yeah, I think it's more those muscle injuries that you're talking about, hamstrings, calf, soleus, and groin injuries, with the increase in change of direction load, which no doubt, most coaches will want to go straight into some sort of game play and small side of games and possession drills just to sharpen the players up, which makes sense. Then you take them into a game where it's big field, change of direction, a lot of duels, a lot of tackles, and I think it's the groins, hamstrings, and calf and soleus. The other thing which will be a bit highlighted, or magnified, I should say, is the fact that contact is reasonably limited in training, in that it has to be structured. So going into tackles, timing might be just a little bit off. So those players who are a bit clumsy in the challenge, you might find your commentators might call them even more clumsy in the challenge, but that just might be a timing issue. Just as you and I, if we haven't played for a bit, might be a bit clumsy in one or two challenges. So,
sure.
there might be a few more yellows and reds in that aspect, and that can lead to a couple of injuries as well. So
right. That's
not as big as a muscle risk, but it's still a factor.
Yeah, we heard that maybe five subs, they're using that in the Bundesliga, and it has, I think, yet to be ratified within the Premier League. What would your opinion be on that as a short-term solution, and potentially as something that might be continued if it works well? Because it strikes me that, in this short period of time, if you do have players who are struggling, and if you need to refresh your team in key areas during a game, it's obviously beneficial, and it might help prevent injuries if you've got somebody who can come off after 55, 65 minutes that might ordinarily have stayed on for 80 or 90. But it might also introduce an extra tactical element to the game in the long term. So your thoughts on that?
I don't see too many negatives, Andrew, at all. I think all of us want to see the best players playing. We don't want to see the best Arsenal or Man City or United players, unless we're playing against them, of course, on the sidelines. So, we all want to see that. So if this rule can help and not detract from the game, which it won't, I think it's a positive. And just imagine, you're down 2-0 at City, and the coach brings on five new players with 25 to go. That would add an amazing amount of excitement to that last 25 minutes. You're all not good enough, off you come. It'd be great. So I don't think it's going to detract from the game, and I think it's certainly a period to trial that.
What about some of the players that Arsenal have at the moment at the club? I know you haven't worked with all of them, but would there be players who are naturally better able to cope with this situation than some others because just they're naturally fit, or they don't require the same amount of, I don't know how to put this, maybe ongoing maintenance? Not like they're sort of cars, but there are players, I'm sure, who do need very specialised attention in training.
Yeah, I think, and you guys would know these players from watching them, but the players that aren't as explosive are probably going to be at an advantage here because they don't need to require as much stress on their muscles. So, and then players that don't have the injury history. Generally centre-halves, centre-midfielders who haven't got those sort of players at Arsenal that don't have the injury history are going to be in a lot better position. Thinking David Luiz and Papa and those guys who haven't had the injury history that perhaps a Mustafi or a Hector Bellerin might have had, they're going to be at an advantage. I don't know too much about some of the other players, but someone like Oba has been injury-free for almost his whole career. Like, he's had an amazing run for such an explosive player. So they're going to counterbalance each other because his game relies on that explosivity. So that's going to put him at risk. But the fact that he's had very few injuries will be a massive plus, and the fact that he's got a great work ethic will help him out. So there's that mix of injury history as well as lack of explosivity, I think, is going to help some of the Arsenal boys.
Right. They're talking about playing some friendlies. If you were looking at this as, from a purely fitness point of view, how would you approach those games? I mean, do you want, I know you say you can't replicate the intensity of a Premier League game, but is it something you would start slowly and say, look, in this game, do your best for, give it 75%, and in the next one, 85%, and I don't know how many games they're going to be able to play, not many in 2 weeks, a couple of behind closed doors games, but how quickly would you want to push the players to test their levels in these friendly fixtures?
Yeah, it's a good question, and no one really knows the answer, but if I had some input into it, I'd want to play probably two very bad teams in friendlies. That way you could control things a little bit easier, and you're less likely to get ultra competitive and, players doing things that they're not quite capable of. Or you just have an agreement with, a Watford next door or something like that, that, hey, we're going to play our best team for 45 and let's have a look at it, and then after that let's just mix and match a little bit. So I'd probably be erring on the side of playing some League Two teams or something like that, where you can dictate play a little bit more, but players can maintain a little bit of match sharpness. So that's probably what I'd be advising if I was there.
Just a couple of final things. I mean, the world of player fitness and everything else has become hugely innovative, and things have changed considerably from, not too long ago in the distant past. Obviously, fitness has always been a major part of it, but innovations within the industry itself. Do you see this lockdown and this crisis as something that can provide inspiration and creativity in terms of how player fitness is managed and, the work that top athletes do?
Yeah, I do. I think sometimes it's a bit overstated, if I'm honest. I shouldn't be saying that too loudly, but sometimes I think, that there's too much importance put on the next best technology. At the end of the day, the stories about Sir Alex Ferguson and Mourinho and the successful coaches from only 10 years ago, whether they just completely, they didn't listen to it too much, listen to people like me too much, and yet they did okay. So Alex certainly came into that late in his career. So I think it can be overplayed. Having said that, in this sort of scenario, I think it would be remiss on managers not to take advice of how players are responding. And with that, you can use some technology. But I wouldn't worry too much about the latest and greatest piece of equipment which will guarantee you, which will sort of see how far players are running. And I mean, we can all see that, how much they're sleeping. That's, they can tell you that. That doesn't need to be, you know, I wouldn't want to get too creative and say, because we've only got 3 weeks here, Mezid or Granit or Oba, wear this device to bed so that I can see exactly how much sleep you've had. That's not going to, you know, that's going to be more of an imposition than anything. So I'd keep it pretty simple and just make sure that, you know, in 3 weeks you can train them pretty hard in perhaps that middle week, and then in that third week as we're coming into the Man City game, just really back off so that the players are fresh coming into the season.
I mean, is that because the levels are so high as it is that you're talking about tiny, tiny percentage increases? It's not like when Arsene Wenger took over in 1996 and he introduced this, you know, remarkable new thing called stretching. You know, it's not quite like, you know, the players
and
are...
nutrition. Yeah. Wild thing called nutrition.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
Yeah, it is. The difference between, say, Liverpool, who in all likelihood are going to win the league, the difference between their fitness and, I don't know, Wolverhampton or going further, you know, Newcastle or whoever you might pick a team is not that much.
Yeah.
If they all ran and did a fitness test, it's actually not that much. It's, you know, the skill of the players. And I would rather have Lacazette, for example, spend 20 minutes practicing his finishing rather than spend 20 minutes doing some extra sprinting, because that's going to win us more games than, you know, than what some extra sprinting is. So you have to have a certain level, and if players aren't at that level, you can increase that. But in the end, it's going to be your ability to create and convert chances and save chances more so than who's got a better VO2 max or who had 8 hours versus 7.5 hours sleep.
Sure. Finally, the gap between the end of this season, which of course has been protracted, and the start of the new season, I think we assume they want to get things back onto what is approaching a normal calendar at least. We normally expect players to have a holiday and a bit of a preseason, and that seems like, you know, just from a practical point of view, nobody's going to be swanning off to Marbella, as you say. But the work that the clubs are going to have to do and the players are going to have to do within that period of time, I mean, would you advocate for a very short gap between the end of the 2019-20 season and the start of next season?
Yeah, I think it's a really delicate issue, and certainly in my time at Arsenal, without sort of giving too much away, there were a couple of occasions where the players' mental well-being really affected their physical performance and injuries. So if you don't have a particularly happy playing group, they're not going to perform. And that's the same with you at work, with me at work, you know, with whoever we're talking about. So how can we keep the players happy? Well, you need to provide them with some sort of break. And as much as you and I can say they've just had 10 weeks off, they've been locked down probably in nice homes, but probably not where they'd rather be in lockdown. So I think there's a bit of a balance there. So I'd be inclined to, if we are able to travel, to give them at least a 2-week break somewhere of their choosing that they would want to go and spend time with their family, friends, whoever. I would think a 4 or 5 week break is plenty, then 2 week break, and then give them that 3 weeks to 4 weeks leading into pre-season, and then get everything going again for financial and whatever else reasons.
Sure. All right. Well, look, we'll see how it goes. And thank you for your insight into this. It's been really very interesting. And hopefully, you know, your work and the work that all the clubs do, see the players come back fit and healthy, and we get to enjoy football again. Darren, thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you very much indeed to Darren. You can find him on Twitter at DarrenBurgess25, at DarrenBurgess25. And he is currently the high performance manager at Melbourne FC. Their season restarts again next week. So if you're an Aussie Rules fan, that's good news for you guys. We have to wait a little bit longer before Arsenal play again, which of course is June the 17th. We're waiting still for the rest of the fixtures to be finalised. Just one thing we touched on in the conversation was the fact that the five substitutes rule had not yet been ratified by the Premier League. It was yesterday, but because of time difference, hoo-ha and all that, the interview was done very, very early in the morning here, and it was later in the day when that five substitutes thing came in. Something we have spoken about on the podcast before and written about on the website, but no doubt people will have opinions, and we can talk about that a bit more on Monday on the Arscast Extra. And hopefully we can talk about the fixtures and when the games are going to be played. Sorry this podcast is a little bit shorter than normal, but it is one of those weeks. I hope you've enjoyed it all the same. Hope you found the conversation about fitness and everything else interesting for a club like Arsenal, which has had, it would be fair to say, some serious issues with fitness and injuries down the year. So let's hope there's a resilience to this squad and they get through the next nine games and hopefully three FA Cup games. That would be good as well. Something we forget about when we think about football coming back is the FA Cup is still there, and we have a quarterfinal against Sheffield United, and then, you know, hopefully a semi-final and a final and another FA Cup. That would be a nice way to end what has been a fucking crazy, surreal, weird, difficult season. A trophy for us as fans, for the club, and for Mikel Arteta and the players would be amazing, but a long way to go before we can start celebrating in any way. Whatever you do this weekend, do it well, do it safely, look after each other. I'll leave you with some music today, feels a bit appropriate. James and I will be here on Monday with an Arscast Extra, so until then, take it easy, folks. Cheers, bye bye.
Spend it all, the have nots. Money, we make it. For we see it, you take it. Oh, make me wanna holler the way they do my life. Yeah. Make me wanna holler the way they do my life. This ain't living, this ain't living. No, no, baby, this ain't living. No, 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 no. Inflation, no chance to increase finance. Bills pile up, sky high. Send that boy off to die. Yeah, and made me wanna holler and throw up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.